I'm here to bring a fresh perspective and a new face to who you may assume would be in the sport. So I want to make sure that when you look and think about NASCAR, that you are curious. Because hopefully listening today, you found out a lot that you didn't know, or maybe a few things you didn't know, but you want more.
You're listening to Culture Champions, a podcast about what it takes to cultivate exemplary work cultures and master sustainable business growth. In each episode, host Zane Hassan sits down with business leaders and experts to bring you in-depth conversations on maximizing value and success in all aspects of your company.
I couldn't be more excited today. We got a really special guest. I know everybody's going to be excited to hear this story. So we've got John Ferguson, who is currently the CHRO of NASCAR. And John is self-proclaimed, and he's been a culture champion. So, you know, our prior guest really was more me doing research and seeing it and kind of realizing that they were culture champions. John is a true culture champion. And when he comes in, and as you guys have this conversation, you're going to see it. It's very evident in the way he communicates, a very intentional approach. So without further ado, John, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you joining us.
Happy to be here, Zane. Thank you for the invitation. And I'm truly excited about this dialogue. We had a little pre-chat, so I know we're going to get into some good pockets of conversation, but also something that I think everyone can take a gem away from.
I agree, and I certainly hope so. One of the things I just recently saw is you're now part, on top of the NASCAR, you're now part of the SHRM Foundation board. That's very recent. Is that correct?
Yes, top of the year, I start a three-year term with the SHRM Foundation, which is the 501c3 nonprofit arm for SHRM, which is the Society for Human Resource Management. So anyone working in the HR space, you're very familiar. But the foundation is focused in three buckets. We're focused on widening pathways to work, strengthening the field of HR, but also leveraging HR in all that we do to drive and address social issues that come up in the workplace and in the world that we live in. Because guess what? Everyone's trying to meet people where they are, and that can be nuanced. So when you talk about being a culture champion, I think a thread there is that you have to understand the subtleties of nuance, because it's not a one-size-shoe-fits-all. It's all varied, and it depends on who your audience is. So you want to be focused on understanding the nuance, so that you can, again, meet people where they are.
No, I appreciate that context. And NASCAR is obviously a very well-known, nobody needs to introduce who NASCAR is. But, you know, in terms of your background, can you kick it off with kind of how did you get to NASCAR and provide some context so that we can, then we'll jump into the culture of NASCAR.
I like it. So one thing I have to say, I want to remind people that NASCAR is the number one form of motorsports in the United States. So we are super excited of all that we've accomplished in our 75-year journey. In 2023, we celebrated 75 years of motorsports. And so in our 76th season, we're super excited to see where we're going to go and what we're going to do. So you started off by asking, how did I get here? So a little background on who I am. So I'm originally from Greenville, South Carolina. I attended Furman University, where I majored in political science. So that's the first bit of a swerve that I took. I thought I was going to be in D.C. working in politics. I did move to D.C. I just did not work in politics. Yeah. My first foray into human resources was with Hyatt Hotels. And that's where I began my HR journey. I was at Hyatt for a couple of years, and then I transitioned to Monumental Sports and Entertainment, which is the home of the Washington Wizards, Washington Capitals, Washington Mystics, and a plethora of other entities. And I was there for just shy of a decade. During my Monumental, I earned my MBA at Howard University in Washington, D.C. And then I also went to Georgetown to get an executive certificate in diversity and inclusion management. I was adding tools to my toolkit, and then I started saying, hey, what other opportunities could exist out there? I was a bit of a linear thinker. I was like, okay, I need to stay in D.C. No one's going to move. Like, I moved from South Carolina to D.C. We're going to make, this is it. But little did I know that there was an opportunity that was placed on my radar. And at first, and this opportunity was NASCAR. At first, I was like, I'm not interested, because I honestly didn't think I'd leave D.C. And then from there, it's kind of like, I'm familiar with NASCAR. I know the brand, but, you know, I'm not necessarily a core fan at this point. And so kind of shook it off for a beat, but then it sort of resurfaced and I said, well, let's learn more. So the key here is to always be curious. And so I had an initial conversation with some of my colleagues, and from that first phone call, something felt different about the opportunity. It felt like they had an opportunity ahead of them, and I felt that I was properly prepared to be a leader and to contribute to the mission that they were trying to accomplish. So One curveball there was that NASCAR had just did a merger with ISC. And so they were also looking for a new head of HR. And what better time to think about transforming culture, because you had two different cultures coming together. And as we call it internal to NASCAR, hashtag One NASCAR was birthed. And that's where we're on this journey today.
Wow. And what you just walked through, I mean, so one piece of context I always like to talk about too is family. So can you kind of walk through that just so we understand? Because if you're entering, you talk about, you know, relocating, does that relocating mean relocation of family?
Oh, yes. And I see you got your family behind you. You got me beat on that. I don't have any family pictures behind me. They're over here. You just can't see them. But I will say, you know, whenever you're talking and growing in your career, so if anyone is looking at a transition in their career, there is an unspoken family tax. And when I talk to people, I'm very clear that this is a package deal. And so it's not John Ferguson making a decision. It is my two daughters being included in that decision. It is my loving wife, Dr. Yuvae Ferguson, being included in that decision, because we have to figure out what's right for us and is the timing and the cadence of that, because people are going to offer you relocation, signing bonuses, all that kind of stuff. But there's an unspoken family tax that you can't put a price to. And so, yes, it's me and three ladies that lead me every day and make sure I'm doing what I need to do. So that's a little bit about me on the family side.
And I like to bring that in because what I've realized is that the reality of, to me, my view is that you don't separate who you are at work, or at least I don't, and who I am at home, except for at the end of the day, like the way I'm catering, but I'm still the same core values. It's still the same purpose. And I've almost found there's an incredible similarity to what's needed to lead at home with the family as what it is needed to lead at work.
You're picking up on a thread that I have discussed before. So there's a couple of reactions I have to just that simple statement. I'm a firm believer that the way I show up in the workplace was birthed by family experiences, whether that's me growing up or raising two daughters. When I think about how did I get better at, because it's always a journey, we're always going to continue to evolve, but how did I continue to evolve as a people leader? My two daughters helps me tremendously, because one is you can be very direct with, and the other is more sensitive. And so I had to realize that I had to start tailoring my messages differently. So I started off the podcast talking about the nuance, and you have to meet people where they are. So even within my household, two kids, same household, same internal, external inputs, but they respond to feedback very differently. So I learned quickly that I had to nurture them in different ways so that they could see the best in themselves and so that I could be the best parent to them. And that translated quickly into the workplace. It's not a one size shoe fits all. So I couldn't go to employee A and deliver the same message as I may need to deliver to employee B, because if I could be direct with employee A, we're good, we're rolling. But if I deliver that to employee B, they may go home that night and be spinning because they were trying to interpret what this meant, what that meant. And so you just want to make sure you tailor the message to the individual. So working in the workplace has been inspired and elevated by my personal family and relationships. And then I also say, I think it's important for a leader to be authentic in who you are. Look, I got to leave work today to go pick up my daughter. She got sick at school. That's life. And so a lot of times I want to make sure that I'm providing that space and grace for whoever's on my team or working with me so that they know that they need to leave to pick up their little one. I am the last person that would say anything negative about that. I'm like, no, go now. Do you need us to get dinner at home for you? Like, how can we support you in this moment? And I believe that my team recognizes that, because I'll join a call sometimes and I'm like, hey, I'm in the car pickup line, but I'm here. Because guess what? That is life. And that's what we're all trying to juggle. And the last thing you need is a colleague, a peer, or a leader that's potentially making you feel bad about that.
Well said. I think that there were a lot of times where that was the case, right? And now it's like one of the things probably in my evolution was the realization that not only am I not going to be, as you can see from my pictures and everything like that, am I going to make sure that everyone knows that I'm very intentional about my family and creating boundaries around making sure that I'm giving them the time? Because it's like at the end of the day, we spend so much time at work, but we do it. And a big part of that is to make sure that I'm showing up, and I have to meditate to make sure I get out of whatever's going on at work so I can show up and be and bring the energy that I need to my family. And you got a lot of people from your prior role. You oversaw a very large organization. The merger of these two organizations, ISC and NASCAR, can you talk to me about what the cultures were like before, what you know about them, and what was this project that you decided yeah, this is for me. What was a culture transformation or what was that going to look like?
So the way I would describe it, so I wasn't with, as you may call if you've ever been in a merger, with either legacy company. When I joined, the merger had happened and we were establishing our foundation.
Okay.
So I think when you're an external person coming into an environment where that the merger recently happened, and while you may not have a suitcase for either side, you're coming in with your own suitcase because you're coming in external, it allows you to sit at a different view and observe, because I think there were two rich legacies coming from both companies. And so, but then when you have two rich legacies, two premier legacies, there's always kind of like, well, which one of us is the top here? Who's the fastest car? But I suggested that we reframe that. I said, let's look at this as a clean sheet of paper in front of us. So now I can draw from this organization's rich legacy. I can draw from this organization's rich legacy. And we're going to chart a new path on this white sheet of paper that's going to increase our competitive advantage times 10 what it could have been as two separate organizations. So let's reframe it. It's not me versus you, because we came from two different companies and we're trying to figure out who had the best process. It is now us versus the problem. And so in that, we're able to reframe it, which creates unity because we're on the same team.
Right.
But this opportunity is this white sheet of paper and how we need to generate revenue, increase fan engagement, attract new fans, and how can we do that successfully together? So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of listening. You know, when you come in, you want to understand how are people viewing this naturally? And then what type of collaboration and partnership can we establish to view it potentially in a different framework, but most importantly, view it together.
I'm hearing a lot of servant leadership in what you're describing, because what you just described would be you're wanting to make sure everybody feels a sense of ownership and being able to kind of discuss what mattered to them about the cultures that they came from to migrate those two. When you went through that, I mean, there's got to be some challenging. There's people who make it through that, and there's just people that culturally within your culture don't. Right. I mean, at least in my experience, and we do a lot of M&A. So can you talk a little bit about like the challenges that arose specific to people where they might have been key people, but culturally they weren't going to fit within the new culture?
I think that's any organization, just as you talked about, whether there's a merger or not. So one thing that always comes to mind for me, no matter where I am working, especially if I'm an HR leader, is that I want it to be known as a great place to work and a great place to be from. So when you think about a great place to work, it is an organization that has supported you, that has allowed you to grow and develop, to sharpen your toolkits. But there also comes a time when maybe you've outgrown said place. Maybe you've reached your highest opportunity there, because we know there's a thing called succession planning. There's other people that were ahead of you. But as we look at the generational mix shifting in the workplace, some folks are like, look, I don't plan to be here for 20 years to get to that level. But at the same time, I say, well, hey, sometimes you have to go to grow. And so that's where your organization being a great place to be from. So if it was a great place to work, you've enhanced your toolkit, you've upskilled yourself, but then it becomes a great place to be from because it helped you. It was a springboard for your next
opportunity. You ascend.
Yeah, it helped you because NASCAR is a global brand. So when you go apply for your next job, they're not going to be confused about where you came from. And so then you could talk about all the contributions that you had at NASCAR and how you can translate that into value for a new organization. Now, let me be clear. You probably think, well, hey, you're grooming talent for them to go. Sure, but I'm also grooming talent for them to circle back. So that's what I would call you going to the boomerang employee. So maybe it's 5 years. You've now branched out, got this additional bucket of knowledge because you went into a different organization, learning their best practices, learning how they have streamlined processes. Now you come back and you're like, you have an extra layer of armor because you know other ways of doing things than just what you've only been able to experience at this organization. And so the boomerang employees generally can be strong additions to your team because they know how you've done it. They've gone external, got some different perspective, a different framework on how to address problems. And then they come back to your organization at a desired level that's attracted to them. And now we're back in the saddle together and we're creating new paths.
That's incredibly well said, very profound. I think a lot of people that are listening may not really understand the critical importance of that. I mean, when I think of that alumni and that, like, there's an ability to keep a community connected. Like, the dream is when you know you've got a great place to work, when other people are scouting your people for them to get promoted and move up, and then they want to come back and bring that value that they just received. So how do you do it? How do you go in and know, like, what's the playbook for you so that you can create that best place to work?
I think it's a team effort. It's not a single point of failure. There isn't just one person in any organization that can do that type of transformation. And when you talk about some of the challenges, when you think about people, we are naturally hesitant to change. Like, this is what I know. It feels good. You think about any big shift you've had in your life, it typically has been accompanied with some pain.
Yeah, I agree. Adversity.
You didn't plan. Adversity, yes. You know, you're thinking like, oh, this is the next step. But it's like, oh, there was a layoff. I was impacted. Wow, I didn't see that coming. What do? I get back, dust myself off, get my resume out. But guess what? 6 months later, you found the dream job. The job you possibly never thought you could get. Because I do believe that we as humans, while we may be resistant to change, we can quickly acclimate to, we can become complacent. And so complacency is, this works, I feel good. But maybe when you first started, you had these higher thoughts. But now it's like, life has changed. I've got a family, I've got this, I've got that. So you have to figure out, what is my new purpose? Because life evolves, your mission and purpose will change also. But that doesn't mean that you should lose sight of those moonshots that you put out there, those big goals that you put out there. So don't settle into complacency. And I would equate complacency with just familiarity. And so when things aren't familiar, that's typically there's change. So be open to the change. So if anyone is here and listening, when your organization is going through mergers, when they're going through reorgs, be the person that has the capacity to flow. Be adaptable. Because guess what? Any leader in that situation is trying to manage a bunch of balls in the air and a bunch of unknowns.
Yeah,
and so I think the best supportive teams are those that can flow, but also appropriately challenge. Like, hey, did you consider this? Did you consider that? Because everybody wakes up every day and puts on their shoes the same way, but everybody has a different perspective and may have a different viewpoint that could allow us to further think through something and not leave anything unturned. So always speak up, always share your perspective, but also know that no matter where you are in the organization, there's typically a layer of the conversation that you may not have insights to. So there could very well be a reason why we didn't do that, but that doesn't mean it wasn't considered. That doesn't mean that there was a hefty debate about it, but the way we came together, because this isn't a one person organization, this is many
right.
people will be impacted by change. So how do we make this palatable for the larger audience, but how do we achieve the business metrics and outcomes that need to go along with this shift?
Yeah, what you just said. So change is for everyone. It's going to happen to everyone. The evolution are for the people that are motivated, right? So, and when I look at that, it's like the requirement of making sure when I think about the best team players, it's the people who they want to know, hey, how can they help when you're undergoing merger, you're undergoing what the change that any, whatever role you're in, whether it's you're in leadership role, the people on your team that volunteer, that raise their hand and they're like, they're comfortable. They understand change is happening, but they want to share their voice. That helps, right? It helps add value in that perspective. How did you engage, you know, with NASCAR? When you came in, I guess, when you were deciding, because you were at a organization where you had really thrived. So can you kind of talk about the actual decision-making process? Because that was a big decision to switch. And you were very successful before. You're very successful now. But just, I think it helps provide context as to how you made the decision, especially because you said you weren't a NASCAR fan before.
I think big picture, it was a challenge that presented itself. It was a place that I felt like I had some strengths coming into, but I also knew that there would be some opportunities for me to continue to learn and sort of develop. So you look at the maturity of the organization, who's there, what have they done, what have they accomplished? And then you look at your own toolkit and how can I add value to that? We talked about the family tax, so it was a conversation there, but it was an opportunity to do something different, to do something new. So full transparency, I have worked in sports most of my career, but I am probably the most casual sports fan in general. So while I was familiar with NASCAR, I had never been to a race or probably even watched a full race on TV. But a week before I started, I went to my first race. And ever since then, I'm not going to lie, I have been hooked. NASCAR is one of the sports that I think the in-person experience is unmatched. When you think about the access that you can get as a family, when you think about the close proximity you can get to the drivers, the pit crews, that is unheard of. Recently, I took some group of students to a track just so they could see. And I was like, hey, we're actually going to get to see, you know, if you've been to a basketball game or hockey game, you're going to get to see their locker room. And I think that's what's different. When have you gone to an NFL game or an NBA game and been able to see the locker room? Never. Not unless you knew somebody that was hooking you up and getting you this behind the scenes access. But when you come to a NASCAR race, you get to go to the garage. You get to go to pit road. Now, these are different price points for different access. Let's be clear. Sure. That's just your general ticket. But it is at a much more affordable price. And so when you think about taking a family of four to go sit courtside or field side at a basketball or football game, that's a very big ticket item.
Yeah.
But here at NASCAR, is something that is much more approachable and appealing to various pockets of our fan base and also the new fans that we're welcoming into the sport. So it's phenomenal. There's no reason why if you got infield access and garage access, you might not get a high five from your favorite driver or get something autographed, which again, those create lifelong memories. And so the first race really sealed the deal. I'd already, committed, but that really sealed the deal that this is going to be a fun ride. There's going to be some turns and we're going to learn. There might be some turbulence, but guess what? We're going to get through it together. And that's what I have received and felt from day one being at NASCAR, because we're on a journey. Everything we do in life is a journey in evolution. And the biggest thing that we're focused on internally and externally is making sure that people understand who we are today. I think a lot of times you have what you believe NASCAR to be, but it's also who are we? And I think a lot of times what you believe or what you've heard is not true because you haven't checked it out for yourself. So if you're watching this today, I want you to be curious about NASCAR. I want you to say, I want to check out that race. I want to get that infield access. I want to go see the locker room, what we would call a garage or the hauler where the team is prepping for the race, because we have a lot to offer. And so as we look to grow the sport, we want to make sure that people are curious. Curious about working for us, curious about coming to the sporting event, because we have a wide array of opportunities available. So you watch the NASCAR race, you're thinking like, oh, it's just these cars going around circling the track. Well, much more than that, because we own the track. The research and design that went into building the next generation car, which debuted a couple of years ago, those were all of our engineers and doctors and patent lawyers and attorneys that developed that. When you think about our medical staff, you think about the transportation group. I mean, we have tracks across the United States. So we're like, picking up every weekend and going to the next city. So there's just a plethora of opportunities. Also, research and design, we talked about that already, but racing electronics. So the headsets, the cameras, all of that is within our ecosystem. So those are opportunities that could present themselves outside of the core traditional corporate functions that make us unique and that would allow you to not only join the organization, but continue to grow and be challenged. Because there's all these different branches of pathways that you can take within the walls and the ecosystem of NASCAR.
So I am super curious, and I, full candor, I'm not someone that has watched, I don't think I've ever watched a full race before. So talk to me about what is, like, when you, I think there's the sort of, like, exactly what you said, what people think, and then the reality. What were the surprises that you, as you got to learn NASCAR, where you're like, this was completely different than what I'm thinking, and I'm not even going to share what I'm thinking, but what I'm thinking was like probably a very limited scope of what NASCAR really is and who's involved in NASCAR and the kind of fans that are actually there. I'm super naive as it relates to that.
Yes. So you probably think of NASCAR being sort of single layered, but I'm going to tell you right now, when you come to a race, you are going to see a plethora of diversity, way more than you probably imagined. And so that was the first thing that really stood out to me when I went to my first race. Like, there's a lot of different people here. There's young people here. Wow. Because you think, it's some older gentleman or that's watching NASCAR. But there's a lot of young people here, because when you look at the younger generation, I think there's data that supports it. They're interested in live events, especially when you think about them post-pandemic, everything shut down, you were stuck at a computer. So people want to be outside. They want to feel community. And I think that's what one thing that NASCAR definitely offers. So my first race was just the proximity, which I already talked about, being able to get close, see, touch, feel, smell the rubber, but also who was there. That really surprised me. And so there's other elements that will be surprising to other people. So when you come to a race, I love to hear what people have to say there as well.
All right. Well, I will make sure I come to a race.
You let me know. We're going to get you in the locker room, okay?
All right. I appreciate that. So, I mean, when it comes to your career, did you have mentors? You've been very successful navigating the challenges of, we're all in the people business, from my view, right? And that is one of the most challenging businesses. Like you mentioned, the difference between how you approach every individual and understanding how they will receive feedback and to be able to coach them. And I kind of view it as like, it's kind to be clear. Right. So that requires tough love sometimes. Yeah. You want to include people and make sure that they feel you want the diversity. You want to include them, feel included. but to also be able to let them to feel included means as their true authentic selves. And that could be a 180 degree different view than what you may have, but to hold that space and let them share whatever's going on in their life personally, because personal challenges always translate into work, right? I mean, it's inevitable. So there's a lot to navigate to have been where you've been and to have ascended to the roles you ascended to. Did you have mentors? Like, what was the key ingredients that allowed you to get through all those challenges?
Definitely had some mentors. I think one thing that I didn't realize early in my career that I was doing was manifesting what I wanted next for myself. And I was very, I think now looking back, vocal about it. You have closed mouths don't get fed. So if you want that next role, you want that next opportunity, you want to be involved in that project, you have to speak up for yourself. And there are mentors that helped me find that voice. I've always been a bit of an extrovert and talkative person. So it wasn't too hard to go find the voice, but it was putting the proper framework around having those conversations with people that you work for and support in the workplace so that they could see what additional value you could add to a project or a new adventure. I also think it's critical that you ask for feedback and solicit it, because that's where growth is. Yes. I firmly believe you should adopt a growth mindset. And if you're not familiar with that, so there's a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. Fixed mindset is I can only do 10 pushups. That's it. Growth mindset is I can only do 10 today, but if I keep practicing and the power of yet, I can do more pushups. I just got to keep practicing and keep doing it, repetition. So the power of yet is I'm not doing 100 pushups yet. And the same thing applies to the workplace. Continue to push yourself, challenge yourself, and figure out what is aligned with your personal mission and your core values. And then also don't limit yourself. If you're ever in a space and place where you feel like, I just feel like I'm at a dead end, maybe there's a reason why that feeling is rising in you. And you should consider what else could be out there for you, because there's not one way to do anything. And so mentors, sponsors, coaches, whatever you want to call them, they played a critical role in my trajectory and just giving me guidance to either tell me, hey, are you looking at this holistically? Or to say, you should look at the bigger picture here. I think that's what a lot of things have come down to. Take it two steps out. Now, what do you see? And you're like, because maybe you're fixated on a point in time, this one conversation, but let's take it two steps out. Let's see now, what do you see? And so I think that's where mentorship is very critical. So I would encourage everyone, no matter your level, find a mentor. I also think there's peer mentoring that can happen too, because there could be someone to your left and to your right. Yeah. That could be just as informative when sharing their experiences and you sharing yours in reverse. So I like to say, sometimes those are just peer coaches. Like, we're coaching each other. You're sharing what you've learned. I'm sharing what I've learned. We talk about it. We figure out what's best for all of us going forward. Then here's one cheat sheet, like TikTok. There's tons of valuable information on TikTok. If you're trying to figure out how to get promoted, how to best position yourself, how to get a pay increase, all those things, how to answer interview questions, whatever it is, it's all on TikTok. And there's tons of experts giving out free advice and free guidance. But guess what? You got to figure out what version of that you want to adopt for yourself. It's not a one size fit all. We've talked about that already. But there's a lot of wisdom being shared on social media that I think sometimes people don't take advantage of. So I would strongly encourage people to, if you don't know where to start, start there.
So are there specific followers or people, like, other than obviously follow John Ferguson?
Don't follow me. I'm not on there. No. Not in a public way. I don't give it out there. I'd like to do podcasts. That way you can get some of my wisdom here. But there's no one particular. There's a few accounts that I kind of follow. But just going to hit HR TikTok, negotiation TikTok, interview prep TikTok. No lie, when I was preparing to come into this organization and going through the interview process, I definitely leveraged TikTok to think about different ways to respond to questions or how to frame up your answers in a way that would make them land. And because I'm a firm believer, when you're going for an interview, you're going to have a storm of information brewing in your head. And they're going to ask you certain questions. And who's left the interview and said, oh, I forgot to tell them about this one project or event, whatever it is, one milestone. So I always say, get a sheet of paper, put on that sheet of paper everything you need them to know about. And no matter what question they ask, you make sure that you incorporate that into an answer where appropriate, or even you just kind of got to bolt it on so that you don't walk away and say, I forgot to tell them this one data point that I think sets me apart from whoever else they may be talking to.
And that just makes me think about the idea of when you're interviewing, because going through the process, when I'm like our executive team, I would say I'm always the dumbest person in the room, and I'm proud to say that. So I'm always getting peer coaching from the leaders that I've been fortunate that they decided that they wanted to come work with me. But one of the things that, like, the interviewing, which most of that gets done by our leadership team, I do a lot less. I'm the last person to interview just to make sure that the actual core values are aligned. But the idea of the questions that are going through there and making sure that you're really articulating well the challenges, because a lot of, to me, life is about the adversity that you face and how you respond to the adversity. Because when things are going great, life is easy, right? But it's how you respond, and with that growth mindset that you talked about, that is one thing that's a non-negotiable. I can't work with people with a fixed mindset, right? Because there's a conversation I remember where somebody said, that business will never work. I've done this before. And I'm like, but you've never done this before with me and with the team that we will be bringing. So everything changes based on the human beings, right? It could be the same idea, same business model. Everything could pivot. What our initial plan is, like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, right? So that punch in the face and how we respond to it is part of the what we're really looking for when we're trying to find out what experiences has someone gone through. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine the roles and people that you were competing against theoretically for that role. So when you talk about, when someone asks you, so John, like, why would you want to work here? And who is John Ferguson? How do you think about that?
John Ferguson is the type of person that believes in relationships. And so the power of relationships will help us overcome any and all adversity. I want to get to know who you are as a person. Let's lower the waterline. Let's get to know each other. So when we have those long days and long nights, we can end it with, hey, Zane, how the kids doing? I know I'm tired. I'm going home. And we get to have that little bow to the end of our day. John Ferguson is a person that believes that he will never stop learning. He's a person that believes that every failure, there was a lesson in it. John Ferguson is a person that wants to give away all of his knowledge and teach people. You have the adage of, I can give you a fish or I can teach you how to fish. I'm a big believer in teaching people how to do the thing, whatever that thing is, because I can give you the answer, but then I'm not allowing you to grow and develop. And one thing you said earlier was, and I'm generally going to be the person that's like, let's try it. Because you talked about, you know, hey, this can't work, but you're like, well, you haven't done it with me. My perspective is that we haven't done it post-pandemic. So much has changed. So much has changed. And so even as a 10-year HR leader, there's something that I had an idea about when I was early in my career. And a leader said, well, hey, let's see. Then I realized, that wasn't really viable. But there could be another junior colleague on our team that has a similar idea. And I could say, no, I tried it 15 years ago. It wasn't viable. So we're not going to do it. No. I say, let's try. Go check. Because so much has changed. So much has evolved post-pandemic. And so I'm always like, let's try, because I think those are the best lessons. Because if I just told you no, it just would have ended right there. There wouldn't have been any learning. But when I say yes, let's see. And I may say, hey, these are some experiences I had when I first tried that. It may be different now, but I'll give you that leg up. Hey, this was the nuance I experienced. Then they may come back and say, still the same challenges. So, hey, I had a light bulb moment. We actually can be successful if we do it this way. Boom. Now they've got their own lesson, their own story that they can tell out of that experience, and they're better for it and we're better for it.
I love that approach. To me, that is the open-mindedness that you're taking that with, is enabling people and their voice to feel heard no matter what. So, like, now NASCAR, looking forward, what's your vision for what you're intending to build? I know you wanted to be the best place to work, and the idea of boomerangs where people they always look back on it, I would say positively, assuming they were a good culture fit. But, like, are there specific objectives that tie back to the business where you're like, this is what I'm here to bring?
I'm here to bring a fresh perspective and a new face to who you may assume would be in the sport. So I want to make sure that when you look and think about NASCAR, that you are curious, because hopefully listening today, you found out a lot that you didn't know, or maybe a few things you didn't know, but you want more. So I want you to be thirsty for us. I want you to check out our job board. I want you to check out our local race schedule and see, hey, where can I go experience this close proximity, this, you know, this locker room that John Ferguson was talking about? Is that real? Yes, it's real. And so that's my biggest takeaway. I want you to be curious about NASCAR, because we are growing in all ways. Internally, we're growing. Externally, we're growing. And we want, most importantly, everyone to know that they can be a part of this fun, this excitement, and this momentum.
Love it. So I think that's a perfect way for us to end the conversation. That's unbelievably, like, to me, NASCAR, I've got a lot of research to do. I think you coming in NASCAR, that was that strategic decision. You're bringing the ability for people to open their mind in general. And I've just having seen and now talked to you, had the pleasure of getting to know you before and after. So it's opened my mind in NASCAR. And hopefully for all our listeners, it will open their mind in NASCAR as well. But John, I really, really appreciate you taking the time and joining us today.
Thank you, Zane. I appreciate it. This has been fun.
You're listening to Culture Champions, a podcast about what it takes to cultivate exemplary work cultures and master sustainable business growth. In each episode, host Zane Hassan sits down with business leaders and experts to bring you in-depth conversations on maximizing value and success in all aspects of your company.